So thank you, Nia Simone. Hey, everybody on Voices from the Frontline. This is your host, Eric Mann. I'm in studio with our producer, Jenny Martinez, and he and I work every week to produce Voices from the Frontlines, your national movement-building show. The Strategy Center, I think a lot of people know, is a center for civil rights, environmental justice. We have a revolutionary politics. We certainly think that what we do know is that we think black people in the United States are an oppressed people, an oppressed nation with the right of self-determination. We think the Chicano people and the Latino people are oppressed peoples with the right of self-determination. We think that the United States is an empire, is in particular an imperialist. It's not even a country. It's an empire that subjugates whole nations and peoples. And in terms of knowing anything about me, I've been in the civil rights movement since 1964 with the Congress of Racial Equality. I worked with Malcolm X. I worked with Malcolm, with Martin Luther King. When I say work with them, they didn't know me from a hole in the wall, but we worked with them. We didn't just march with Dr. King in the abstract. We knew them. They were at meetings that we were at. They spoke. We listened. I worked with James Farmer, who I did know, who was the head of CORE. I worked with George Wiley. I was blessed to spend three of the most amazing hours of my life with Fannie Lou Hamer of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I realize I did also spend about three or four hours with Bob Moses. And each time when I say hours, I mean we were organizers. This was not at a big meeting. This was a meeting of 15 organizers where they were coming to talk to us. As I go around the country to talk to organizers, often it is 5, 6, 8, 10 people who are the core, the heart and soul of why it's chance to make something happen, you know. So I think so much about Fannie Lou Hamer. I think so much about Robert Moses all the time, the late George Wiley, and many, many of my teachers. So the Strategy Center has been doing a lot of important work, obviously, at the intersection of the black and Latino community. And we've all been very impressed by, excited by the development of the Black Lives Matter movement, Black Lives Matter organizations. And as with all organizations, they go through transitions, they go through struggles, they go through challenges. I think Black Lives Matter began by asserting its edge, as I think a lot of you know. Began with the struggle against the police. The issue of the police against the black community is the central question facing the black community. The police and the army are the central question facing oppressed people all over the world. Why? Because in a racist, imperialist country, you can't rule voluntarily. You need the police. So it's not police brutality. That's a misunderstanding. It's a police occupation. So Black Lives Matter came to power, and it's a good word, came to influence, maybe a better word, in Ferguson. After Ferguson, you know about I don't have to tell you all the things about Black Lives Matter. Fortunately, it's very, very well known. Now, one of the challenges, some say criticisms, but some of the challenges to Black Lives Matter was that you're building a very important movement, you have high visibility, you're leading up a lot of important struggles, but are you going to become a political movement? It doesn't mean that these struggles are not political, but if you got Bernie Sanders and if you got Hillary Clinton, if you got the Democratic Party trying to set what they believe is politics in this country, which none of us in the Black Liberation Movement think that they set the politics, that the Democratic Party sets those politics. But then the question is, as they always say, what is it that you people want? And I have not been involved in this process, but I certainly know that a lot of the Black Lives Matter organizers around the country have taken that challenge very seriously. And they've said, you're right, we need to move, I'll even say, from protest to politics. This is all a preface to this discussion we're going to have of a vision for black lives, policy demands for black power, freedom, and justice. So during the 60s, a man named Bayard Rustin wrote a book called From Protest to Politics. And because Bayard Rustin was gay, was back then homosexual, as it was said, there's a lot of romanticism of who he was based on the fact that absolutely he suffered terrible abuse as a gay man. But let's be clear, Bayard Rustin was a very, very powerful dude. He was one of the most powerful people in the civil rights movement. And I didn't like his politics at all, and neither did most of us in the movement at the time. Because when he said from protest to politics, he meant protest to go inside the Democratic Party.
That's a very different distinction.
Right? So he said, we got to go from protest to, as if we weren't being political, attacking the war in Vietnam, attacking the Democratic Party. In fact, the politics of the civil rights movement was grown in its fight against Kennedy, in its fight against Johnson, and Bayard Rustin was trying to get people to go into the Democratic Party at a very time when the people who had had the bad experience with the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party said, we can't stand the Democratic Party. The reason I say that is because when you say you want to get political, Black Lives Matter has always been political. They had no obligation to have a program. They had no obligation to have a coherent worldview. They were doing great, and they are doing great. Nonetheless, it is a reflection of the maturity of their movement that they've come up with, first of all, a very visually beautiful paper called A Vision for Black Lives. I just saw it today. Manuel Criollo just told me about it last night. Policy demands, right on, for black power, freedom, and justice. It's called The Movement from Black Lives at policy.m4bl.org. Channing and I were on the phone trying to get representatives to be on the show. We'll definitely have somebody on the show next week because we want to keep this conversation going. But I didn't want to wait because I wanted to give some props to and attention to the important work that they're doing. So since they wrote something, I'm going to do a lot of reading, basically. All right, so it starts again, a great title, A Vision for Black Lives, Policy Demands for Black Power, Freedom, and Justice. Black humanity, and this is their overview, black humanity and dignity requires black political will and power. Despite constant exploitation and perpetual oppression, black people have bravely and brilliantly been the driving force pushing the U.S. towards the ideals it articulates but has never achieved. In recent years, we've taken to the streets, launched massive campaigns, impacted elections, but our elected leaders have failed to address the legitimate demands of our movement. We can no longer wait. Parenthesis, I hope they know that's based on Martin Luther King's Why We Can't Wait. Very good. You know, we can never wait. In response to the sustained and increasingly visible violence against black communities in the U.S. and globally, a collective of more than 50 organizations representing thousands of black people from across the country have come together with renewed energy and purpose to articulate a common vision and agenda. We are a collective that centers and is rooted in black communities, but we recognize we have a shared struggle with all oppressed people. Collective liberation will be a product of all our work. I want to point out that we are going to go to the phones at 818-985-5735, about 10 to 5, to get a few, hopefully primarily black listeners, to respond to what they think of this. But please listen first, you know, so don't just jump on the phone before you've even heard what it says. So I'll give you the number again in about 10 minutes, but I want to do some reading of their thoughts. While this platform is focused on domestic policies, we know the patriarchy, exploitative capitalism, militarism, and white supremacy know no borders. We stand in solidarity with our international family against the ravages of global capitalism and anti-black racism, human-made climate change, war, and exploitation. We also stand with descendants of African people all over the world in an ongoing call and struggle for reparations for the historic and continuing harms of colonialism and slavery. We also recognize and honor the rights and struggle of our indigenous family for land and self-determination. We believe in elevating the experiences and leadership of the most marginalized black people, including but not limited to those who are women, queer, trans, femmes, gender nonconforming, Muslim, formerly and currently incarcerated, cash poor and working class, differently abled, undocumented, and immigrant. We are intentional about amplifying the particular experience of state and gendered violence that black, queer, transgender, nonconforming women and intersex people face. There can be no liberation for all black people if we do not center and fight for those who have been marginalized. It is our hope that by working together to create and amplify a shared agenda, we can continue to move forward in a world in which full humanity and dignity of all people is recognized. So just parenthetically, this is my commentary now. Obviously, they're saying there is a black liberation movement, but they're trying to address in this paper some of the internal contradictions inside the black community, which all liberation movements need to address if they ever are going to succeed. And they're doing it in a way that is obviously very positive and focusing on new forms of leadership and struggles. Well, they said their own words. So, you know, the struggles against patriarchy, white supremacy, and the elevation of particularly oppressed people inside the Black United Front. We recognize that not all of our collective needs and visions can be translated into policy, but we understand that policy change is one of the many tactics necessary to move us towards the world we envision. We've come together now because we feel it is time to forge a new covenant. We're dreamers and doers, and this platform is meant to articulate some of our vision. The links throughout this document provide us stepping stones and roadmaps of how to get there. The policy briefs also elevate the brave and transformative work our people already engaged in and build on some of the best thinking in the history of struggle. This agenda continues the legacy of our ancestors who pushed for reparations, black self-determination, and community control. It also propels new iterations of movements such as efforts for reproductive justice, holistic healing and reconciliation, and ending violence against black, queer, and trans, cis, queer, and trans people. All right, now, 818-985-5735. It is very important as we're going into an election year that there's a perception. This is Eric Mann speaking on Voices from the Front Lines. I want to be clear when the vision for Black Lives is speaking, when I'm speaking. I think one of the things that's so important about this document is that the movement has never been represented by the Democratic Party. Let's forget about the Republican Party. And building its relationship independent of, to the left of, and to the militant of the Democratic Party is being critical. Now, in recent statements I've been reading about Democratic Party strategists, they said just yesterday, it's in the New York Times and the LA Times, that now that the party sort of moved to the left to get Bernie and, you know, Hillary moved to the left, as always, now it's serious time, folks. You got to move back to the right. And the Democratic Party's key demographic is white people.
Middle class white people.
Yeah. Because they know the black community is going to vote, or they believe the black community is going to vote Democratic. And they do not believe there's a white majority that supports black liberation, which, by the way, is true.
Yep.
So, given that Hillary Clinton's main objective is not black liberation, but getting elected, and she feels that she has black support, the growth towards patriotism, when Donald Trump says the biggest issue is public safety, and that you watch the Democratic Party is moving now towards patriotism, safety, honoring police. So let's understand that that whole convention was filled with flags. It was given great reviews by Republican strategists.
Yeah, that's right.
Who said,
that's right.
Who said, you guys did great, I have to give you credit. You grabbed the flag, Trump is making big mistakes attacking Muslims, and the Republican Party is in big trouble. The point of which is, in the middle of this madness about the best way to reach white people comes and the war on black people. And I think the reason why I'm trying to give this so much attention to people is because this is the independent challenge to both parties and to the Green Party and to everybody about, is there going to be a black liberation platform consistently put in front of the candidates? So again, nice timing, comrades, and now I'm going to go into some of their demands. But again, I'm trying to frame, not they've also done their own framing, but to tell you how enthusiastic I'm about this and how important the timing is, and nicely done. It's also very beautifully laid out. Okay.
It's very beautiful.
Right. So now, we demand, this is back to a vision for black lives, policy demands for black power, freedom, and justice. This is Eric Mann. I'm on the show with our producer, Channing Martinez. you will be the first commentator, Channing, after I read a few, and then we're going to go to the phones, 818-985-5735, around 4:50. So I'm going to read, starting with some of the key demands. Immediate end to the criminalization and dehumanization of black youth across all areas of society, including but not limited to our nation's justice educational system. An end to zero-tolerance school policy and arrest of students. 2, an end to capital punishment. The reallocation of funds from police and punitive school discipline practices to restorative. So the first demand is an end to the criminalization and dehumanization and the beginning of defunding the police, which is 2, an end to capital punishment. An end to money, bail, mandatory fines, fees, court surcharges, and defendant-funded court proceedings. 4, an end to the use of past criminal history to determine eligibility for housing, education, licenses, voting, loans, unemployment, other services. 818-985-5735, although me and Channing will be more than happy to just talk for the rest of the show. 5, an end to the war on black immigrants, including the repeal of the 1996 crime and immigration bills, and I will say passed by the Clinton administration. An end to all deportations, immigrant detention, and immigration and customs enforcement ICE raids, and mandated legal representation in immigration courts. Every section has its own demands. So those are the first under end the war on black people. Economic justice, a progressive restructuring of tax codes, federal and state job programs, a right to restored land, clean air, clean housing, an end to the exploitative privatization of natural resources, the right of workers to organize in public and private sectors, restore the Glass-Steagall Act to break up the large banks. Then, an end to the war on black, trans, queer, and gender nonconforming people, including their addition to anti-discrimination civil rights protections, an end to the mass surveillance of black communities, the demilitarization of law enforcement, including law enforcement in schools, an immediate end to the privatization of police, prisons, and jails. Until we achieve a world where cages are no longer used against our people, we demand an immediate change in conditions, an end to public jails, detention centers, youth facilities, and prisons as we know them. This includes the end of solitary confinement, the end of shackling of pregnant people, access to quality health care, and effective measures to address the needs of our youth, queer, gender, nonconforming, and trans families. I just want to read one more. Reparations, which is really critical.
Very important.
We demand reparations for past and continuing harms, reparations for the systematic denial of access to high-quality educational opportunities, reparations for the continued divestment from discrimination towards and exploitation of our communities, reparations for the wealth extracted from our communities, reparations for the culture and educational exploitation, legislation at the federal and state level that requires the United States to acknowledge the lasting impacts of slavery, and I can go on. So, Channing Martinez, what's your response to this new paper?
Well, I've read so far the criminal injustice part of the paper so far and the reparations part, and I can say that it's really, really detailed and really goes into very specific things that a lot of black people are thinking but don't typically say out loud, like why are our families suffering from all these court fees, which was an issue that was in Ferguson,
right?
Which is an issue that we're trying to raise here with the Metro. Why are people being ticketed for putting their feet on the chairs, right? As simple as that, up to actually being sent to prison for not being able to pay your fare because there's no jobs in your communities, because the companies don't want you to be hired as a black person. And so I think that it's very, the vision itself is extremely historically important. And I also want to just talk about the importance of having a revolutionary program and actually not just fighting against some of the attacks that are on the black communities, but being able to actually think beyond that. What do we want? Not just no police, but because you had police locking up 50% of black people in this country, we not only want you to not have police, but we need you to pay for that. Those are my initial thoughts. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because Channing wrote an article about a week ago or 2 weeks ago called Jesse Williams me and no. I'm sorry. I didn't want to get the main point I was saying is how much you focus. It was called the celebrity, the organizer, and you. I probably got it wrong again. The main point I was saying is how much you focused on demand development and how much we need a new generation of young people to focus on demands. So given that, and the Strategy Center has worked, we produce towards a program resistance. We love demands, and we think demands is what raises people's consciousness. So again, we're obviously super enthusiastic. A vision for black lives, policy demands for black power, freedom, and justice. The movement for black lives, now it says policy.m4bl.org. So did you go on the site today? 818-985-5735. Did you go on the site to get this?
I did go on the site, yeah. The other thing I want to add to what you're saying about demand development is that it's also when you're in the room with the enemy, the main thing that's going to make them cringe is if you put a demand on them, I want this concrete. They will be like, oh, I actually need to respond to that. I need to take them serious.
Okay, so the question is how would our listeners, and we're going to take a call, I think, but how would our listeners find this document? That's my main point. I want them to read it. A Vision for Black Lives, Policy Demands for Black Power, Freedom and Justice. The Movement for Black Lives is the, as we say, it's saying 50 black organizations around the country.
Yeah, you can find it on almost every social media platform, or you can go directly to this link, and it will say downloadables, and you're actually able to actually download the PDF of the entire program.
So it's policy at m4bl movement for black lives.org. And again, big props to them for the level of layout, graphics, beautifully written, really important. And I think everybody should be reading it. And next week we're going to continue it because this is historic. This is so much more important, I'm sorry, than Bill, Hillary, Barack, Trump, blah, blah, blah. I mean, this is a vision for black lives. Very, very exciting. And it's happening in the middle of a national election. All right, let's go to the phones and see who has something to say. Hello?
Yes, Eric.
Yeah, Nick?
Rick.
Rick, what's happening, Rick?
Yeah, man, you know, to me, we're being played like a fiddle. You got George Soros backing the Black Lives Matter movement, and that's the enemy as far as I'm concerned. And then we have this black-white paradigm that is being shoved down the throats of people. There's no such a thing. We're not black. We're not white. We have a nationality. If you don't have a nationality, then you are subject to the black codes. And that means, where are your papers? We can lynch you. We can kill you. The police are doing exactly what they're instructed to do, to police us. That's policy. Policing is policy. And so what I see in this whole thing is until we stop with the black-white paradigm and the left-right paradigm and get with the story that this land was from coast to coast occupied by melanated people, it's in the chronicles of Meriwether Lewis. They said...
All right. We just want to move to another listener, but I want to take seriously. I mean, you understand on our show we let you talk. So we wanted to hear what his point of view is. I just want to say something about, since he said it, about George Soros, Black Lives Matter. Look, every political movement is meeting with somebody about money. I don't know how to break it to you. There's nothing wrong with that. What's wrong with that is if the money dictates your politics. It's always a very complicated dance. I am out there organizing to raise money. And whether you tell me I met with Henry Ford or George Soros. I mean, it doesn't do anything. Read what they just wrote. Does this look like George Soros wrote this? I mean, it's very insulting. So I just want to say it's these sisters and brothers have just put out something very important. And for KPFK listeners to be worried about who, first of all, we don't know who met with whom. Yeah, the Democratic, let's understand, I know what's going on. The Democratic Party is trying to co-opt black people into the Democratic Party.
That's right.
So that's what
they always have.
As they always have. So I just want to be very clear that we don't want that story to be out there. I mean, you could put it out there, but I would not touch it with a 10-foot pole. You have the right to say it, and I have the right to strongly disagree with it. Next call, Barbara from Gardena. Barbara, welcome to Voices from the Front Lines. Hi.
Okay. I think it's a little bit complicated. When I was a kid, they gave us four principles for the way that people are controlled. One was co-opt the clever. Two was confound the masses. Three was colonize. And fourth was kill. And over the years, I've added my own corrupt. The paper kind of falls into the area of confound. I think that they, Black Lives Matter was doing a lot better when they stuck to cops and courts.
Why do you think so?
Because something has to get done. And sometimes you just need to take a broom and sweep your own house with it rather than, you know, trying to clean up the world. You have to get something done. So since they started out with the injustices and the brutality being levied against the African-American community, I think they ought to get that done. And all the rest to come.
Okay. Nicely said. Right. You're very good with words. Very nicely argued. Our next listener is Carlos. Can we listen to Carlos?
Hi, listen.
Welcome to Voices from the Frontlines.
Yes, hi. The previous caller had one of the previous callers had a point. Black Lives Matter is financed by George Soros, who represents the top financial family.
All right, listen, folks, I'm sorry. You have the right to speak, but is there any kind of sense of generosity out there? Is there any sense of appreciation of what other people have done? I mean, you have the right to slander Black Lives Matter, I guess, in some abstract way, but we're not going to tolerate it on Voices from the Frontlines. You made your point in one sentence, but I want to say it again. Read this for yourselves, folks. It's pretty upsetting. I mean, it's a beautifully done paper. I am deeply moved. I'm so optimistic and hopeful. A vision for Black lives, policy demands for Black power, freedom, and justice, the movement for Black lives, policy.m4bl.org. It's been printed on paper. Paper costs money. It was written. Somebody got paid to sit and write. They were probably in an office that had rent, so they didn't want to get rained on. I mean, then they got on a plane that cost money. I mean, come on, folks. Are we really going to fall for this? Are we going to allow this level of slander against a real important breakthrough in terms of Black strategic thinking that debate it, read it. You could disagree with it even, or you can disagree with some of it, but let's give some credit where credit is due. And I just want to say from Jenny, will get the last word, but from Eric Mann and Jenny Martinez, obviously, we are totally 100% thrilled by this development. This allows a conversation about the future of the Black liberation movement, which is what writing is all about.
That's right. I also want to push back on it. I don't really care about who they're funded by. Look at these words. What organization is being funded where the funder is saying, please, please, I want you to actually write about reparations for Black people? A lot of people are extremely scared about reparations, and they don't know what to talk. They don't know what to say about reparations. This is a very revolutionary document, and it does have a real vision that people actually need to take seriously and actually give credit where credit is due.
I would just end with, how much time do I got? Give me two, three, great. So I'm going to end with this. I'm going to talk about money more. I like money. All revolutionaries believe in raising money. During the 60s, Harry Belafonte was the leading fundraiser for the civil rights movement. He raised money for Malcolm X. He raised money for Martin Luther King. He raised money for SNCC. There are people with a lot of money who will give money to a magazine about reparations because the average capitalist will not, the average white person will not, the average Black person will not give lots of money to a movement about reparations. But there are people who have money who say, I was not placed on this earth because of this money. I have it. Some people have inherited it and don't want it to rot. You know, other people have made money and feel, I want to do something with that money. So
that's right.
Let's be very clear, folks. I'm shocked that, very frankly, we had three calls. One person was dismissive of the paper by saying they should go back to organizing, but they didn't say they want to stop the organizing. They simply say they want to expand it. And two other people, which is not normal for Voices listeners, who have a pretty generous group, attacked without even reading it. I mean, the thing just came out. And as you notice, these listeners didn't even refer to, they didn't say on page 6, I disagree with it. So we have to be very careful to understand that part of the dilemma we're in is that there have been character assassinations and real assassinations of black people who stood up and spoke. And we're not going to tolerate that on Voices from the Front Lines. These are our sisters and brothers. We know a lot of them. A lot of them are our friends. A lot of them actually went through the Strategy Center, are still allies of the Strategy Center. So, folks, I'm asking you, as Voices listeners, to read policy.m4bl.org. Next week, we're going to have some of the writers of this on the show with Channing and myself. We're going to have a further discussion of it. We want to do everything we can to elevate this important paper. And with that, I think we're going to say goodbye. So, yeah, listen, tell her, Nina. Tell him, Nina.
My way.
We don't do it my way. Don't listen to those folks. You hear it? So all props to A Vision for Black Lives, Policy Demands for Black Power, Freedom and Justice. This is Eric Mann.
Channing Martinez.
Thanks for being on Voices from the Front Lines. We'll see you next Tuesday at 4. And we've said it before, and we say it again, all power to the people. We want to thank Brother Kwadwo Obeng, who brought some wisdom and historical perspective to the young black organizers. And let's go out and keep the fight going. Thank you.
Yes, regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do and saw it through without